Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix, I'm interviewing Devin Burke, and we're going to be talking all about sleep and what it takes to get a good quality night of sleep and why it's so critically important. Now, during this podcast, heads up, I have two of my dogs battling a little bit and I cannot get them to stop. So you might hear some grumbling in the background. Yep, I do not have critters hanging out in my basement, just my two dogs having a little battle during this podcast. So let's get on with it and let's get you some great information.
Hey, health junkies, I have a treat for you today. I have the pleasure of chatting with Devin Burke. Devin helps high achievers and exhausted insomniacs, kind of like myself, get and stay asleep so they can wake up with more peace, power, and presence. So, Devin, welcome to the Health Fix.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk sleep with you.
Yeah. So, interesting component here. Now, you are one of the top 25 health coaches out there, and you almost didn't become a health coach. You were on a mission to become a doctor of physical therapy. And then there was this trip to Europe, and all of a sudden, here we are at the Sleep Science Academy and all of the Sleep Guru department. So what the heck happened? What happened on that trip? How did you end up being the Sleep Guru?
Yeah, thanks for teeing that up for me. Yeah, so real quick, because I know we want to talk a lot about sleep, but my story was, yeah, I got back from a 2.5 month trip to Europe, was on the beach, kind of, you know, meditating, praying, a little bit of both, and just realized that I wasn't that passionate about physical therapy. And someone I was working with had worked with a health coach, and she just had this transformation. I had no idea what health coaching was. That was a thing. So, long story short, I met with her. She kind of explained to me, hey, this is what a health coach does. We help, you know, lifestyle management, nutrition, stress. And so I went back to school for health coaching, and I did that for a number of years and learned a lot of different things about around health, different methods, modalities. And it wasn't until a client was having issues with their sleep and asked for help on that, that I started to really understand how important and powerful sleep is. I took it for granted, thought it was a waste of time, like most people. And then I looked into the science. I started looking into the science of it. And I was like, wow, this is not only is it the foundation of health, there's a huge problem. There's not a lot of good solutions for people that don't sleep. So that sent me down the rabbit hole of really diving deep into the science and psychology of sleep. You know, which leads us up to Sleep Science Academy and helping people all over, mostly America, be able to restore their natural sleep cycles and get to sleep.
That's huge. That's huge. I'm glad that you were called to come to do the sleep department, because really, as a naturopathic doctor in practice, I see a ton of patients who are like, doc, I can't sleep. But then there's the folks who are like, doc, I can't lose weight. My body just, I'm tired all the time. I don't know what's wrong. And I'm going, well, you know, what's going on with your sleep? And they're like, I sleep fine. I sleep 6 hours a night. I'm good. You know, I don't need anymore. I'm like, do you though? And then I get the whole, like, I'll sleep when I die crew who are like, I don't need sleep. I function better off less sleep. And it's like, wait a minute. But you have all these issues that are happening. And so with sleep, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to ask about, because we wanted to talk about stress, and I love talking about stress. How does stress start to scientifically affect and physiologically affect the body's ability to sleep? Like, what's the process? Give us a breakdown on what happens.
Yeah, I love this question, and it's an important one to really dive into and explore. So physiologically, the body starts to get into a fight or flight mode, dumping that cortisol into the system, which dump, you know, the adrenaline, the noradrenaline, all the chemical responses that say, wake up, stay awake. There's an immediate threat. Now, whether that threat is imminent in your environment or mostly in our minds, that creates a series of reactions in the body that doesn't allow the body to shift back into the parasympathetic. So I like to use a super simple analogy. It's like your stress, if there's a switch, stress switch, it gets stuck in the on position and doesn't really ever toggle off. And it's this low level sort of chronic restlessness or anxiety that then gets exacerbated when there's more stress coming into our lives, either mental, emotional, physical, environmental, which then leads to poor sleep, which then leads to more stress, and then on and on this vicious cycle goes. And so it's really a matter of understanding, how do you start to get back into the parasympathetic nervous system response? And a lot of people have a very hard time doing that because they think that it's normal to be, most people are addicted to stress hormones. They thrive on cortisol and adrenaline. That's sort of what gets them going, and some people like it. And so there's a lot there, but hopefully that's a starting point for answering this question.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree that a lot of us thrive on it. And because I think the cortisol is really what's giving us energy because we've one, not slept like we should. Two, we're not fueling ourselves like we should. And so, and taking breaks and being into that recovery mode like we should. So we're ending up in this just like, give me more. 'Cause then I need, that's like my fake energy. And then you add some, bangs and Red Bulls and some coffees on top of it and like, boom. Let's go. So one of the things I talk to a lot of my folks about is a great wind down routine and making sure to put breaks during the day. Now, would you agree that trying to put yourself into parasympathetic mode more often would help you along the way to get a good night's sleep? What's the ticket, kind of setting us up for a good night's sleep?
Yeah, I love what you just said, because a great night of sleep happens as soon as you wake up. So all those things you just mentioned are critical, and people just don't, for some reason, seem to, it seems like common sense, but it's definitely not common practice. And it's you can't have this super stressful day and then expect your body just to be able to all of a sudden get into relaxed mode. It's, throughout the day, you need to be taking breaks. You need to hydrate. You need to, get into that parasympathetic and really toggle that switch. Because it's that builds up, that tension and pressure builds up in our mind body systems. And then we expect at the end of the night that our minds are just going to turn off and our bodies are going to know what to do. It just doesn't happen. So I love it. Yeah, 100% what you do from the moment you wake up all the way to the moment your head hits the pillow at night is going to make a difference as far as your ability to either fall asleep, stay asleep, or wake up refreshed. And it's not, again, what's good for your health is going to be good for your sleep. What's good for your sleep is going to be good for your health. So a lot of the things overlap. There's a lot of, we can't really separate our day from our night or our night from the day. So it's really important to understand that these things are not, they're bi-directionally linked, and they affect each other. So yeah, I love taking breaks. I always have our clients make sure that they're not bombarding their schedules back to back to back, where there's no white space, there's no time to go outside and just take a couple deep breaths, or just get back into your body and get out of your head, because that's where a lot of people live in today's 21st century world. We're always thinking ahead, always on, on the computer, always on looking, and that unfortunately leads to a lot of unnecessary stress.
Yes, that is something that you mentioned that was super key, getting out of our head. I find that so many people that can't shut the mind off, one, are gonna have trouble falling asleep, but then they're waking up and they're thinking and thinking and thinking again. And one of the biggest questions is, Doc, how do I shut my mind off? What do I do? So what do you have in terms of advice for some of your clients that you'll typically kind of run through the scenario of like when they're like, I can't shut my brain off. Like, how do I even do this? What do I do?
Yeah.
Where do I start? Help.
Yeah, that's one of the most common questions I get as well. And it really starts with creating some mindfulness, becoming aware of your thoughts, becoming aware of, how do you separate yourself from your thoughts? And so that could be take the form of meditation practice, prayer, getting in nature. I mean, the simplest way is just a mindfulness practice, like literally setting a time every day where you actually practice, whether it's 5, 10, 20 minutes a day, where you're just sitting and you're watching your thoughts, and you're allowing yourself to see that you're not your thoughts. Because I think that's a big shift for people when they can separate, oh, I'm having thoughts, my thoughts don't have me. That's like a first step. And then once you have that awareness, then there's a lot of cognitive strategies and tools to put in practice to be able to calm the mind down, be able to understand that your mind is starting to rev up because you're not creating the space to allow it to, you know, simmer down or calm down or create that time to back off, you know? So it's first create the awareness, and then you can apply the strategies and tools to start to understand how to slow down a racing mind. And that's really, it's the mind never turns off, even during the night. So it's in some stages of sleep, it's actually more active than during the day. So mind doesn't shut off, but there are things we can do to throttle it. And that starts with awareness. And I one of the best practices is mindfulness tools.
I love mindfulness. I fully admit that I suck at meditation, but I'm good at mindfulness to be like aware of my thoughts and be like, wow, okay. Yeah. That was one thing that I thought I was like in my little like reel in my head. Like, this is me. I'm going through this. Like, this is all me. But when I discovered that it was just thoughts. Nothing, yeah. You know, nothing that I had to really deal with, nothing that I had to really, you know, think about, process a little bit more than just letting them go and letting them come in and go. It was a game changer for me. So this is something that I think is really, really useful for folks to think about. Now, when you're going through the process of helping someone become more aware, I think this is a key component that sometimes folks might be like, well, Devin, I'm aware of these thoughts, but I need to write them down. I need to, you know, articulate them. How do you have folks go through that when they're starting to realize that some of these thoughts, yes, they're not theirs, but maybe they need to remember some of these things? Because I have some folks that are like, maybe I need to write everything down. What do you say to them?
Yeah, so we take people through a process called the negative sleep thought checklist, which essentially is a long list of thoughts that after reading, they realize, wow, I thought these were my thoughts, but they realize that everyone that goes through our entire program has these same thoughts. There's usually about 5 to 10 that resonate the most for them. And that just proves, hey, these aren't your thoughts. Like, there's everyone else that's going through the same process you're going through has these same thoughts. So they're not yours, right? So having that awareness of what those thought patterns are is a great step, and going through an exercise, whether that's writing them out, just becoming aware that you're having the same thoughts, and most of those thoughts are the thoughts that create stress that are actually not based in truth, is a massive step in the right direction. Then you could start to practice something like acceptance and watching just the thoughts come through and noticing what happens when you don't, you know, start catastrophizing or focusing on. You just allow the thought to be there. You don't make it wrong. You don't judge it. You see it for what it is, and then boom, it's gone. And a new thought comes in. So practicing that, it is a practice, but not only does it help you sleep better, it helps you live better, because now you're in a place where you're able to have perspective. And with that perspective, you can make better decisions and choices, which then your body starts to respond in a better way.
Ooh, okay. So I want to know, what are some of those most common thoughts that we all have? Because I think a lot of people right now might be like, oh, am I one of those people that have one of these common thoughts and I need to get it over my head? And then second part of the question is the stress-inducing thoughts. Are they the same thing, or can you give us a couple examples? Because I think if we can tie that in for folks, we might get some light bulbs going on and get some folks being like, yes, Devin, I need to hook up with you in the Sleep Science Academy.
Yeah. So the most basic common thought that I've identified that almost everyone that has real sleep challenges has is I'm going to have this experience for the rest of my life. This is going to be, I'm never going to sleep the way I used to, or I'm never going to be able to sleep well. That at the very core base level is this oftentimes very subconscious thought. Sometimes it's not, but it's this fear that this is going to continue, this ongoing pain. And we're always seeking to avoid pain and moving towards pleasure. And so that is at the base level is like a core thought for most people to have insomnia, chronic insomnia. Then there's thoughts like, oh, I'm a light sleeper. I have bad genetics. Everyone in my family, it was always a bad sleeper. I'm broken. My sleep system is broken. Something is physically wrong with me. I'm not going to be able to heal. My mind and body's not going to be able to heal itself. That's a big one. Like, something is really wrong with me and I don't know what it is. That's an anxiety inducing thought. And oftentimes it's not based in truth. And that thought actually is one of the, all these thoughts are thoughts that keep people from sleep. So really those are some super common ones, but there's like, I have a list of like 30 that if people that have issues either getting to sleep or staying asleep read, they'd be like, oh my gosh, like, wow. They would be able to at least pick five main ones, probably 10 that just are like playing in the background. Like I'm a light sleeper, or I need this perfect environment in order to sleep. That's a really common one. People think, oh, I need a cold, dark room. It needs to be quiet. I need to do all these things in order to sleep. That's not true. There's people that sleep on subways, side of the road, in planes, in trains. So you don't really need, I mean, it's good for sleep quality, but you don't really need anything in order to sleep. It's a natural biological process that happens when you allow it to happen. So
That brings up an interesting question. Sleeping on a plane, sleeping on a train, sleeping on a subway. Do you teach folks how to be able to effectively sleep anywhere? Like, is that part of your programming at all? I'm just curious because I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm one of those people that I struggle to sleep anywhere except for the car. I don't know what that's about. And usually while I'm driving, that's like not supposed to happen. So tell us a little bit, like, do you go through that? Is there any like power nap training or like sleep training that you have? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you're giving me a great idea for a training. It's not part of our current program, but like that could be definitely an offering in the future. Sleep, learn to sleep anywhere. It's and there that is, you know, it is there is some skills to allow that to happen. It's the more you're able to access peace, the more your body is able to rest when it needs to rest. And I like to use the word rest. Rather than relax, I just feel like when you're resting, it's more of an internal experience. When you're relaxing, it's kind of more external experience. But resting, you can learn to rest. And if you rest properly, oftentimes, if your body needs to sleep, it'll sleep. So getting into a more peaceful state and practicing embodying peace and rest is a practice. But I don't have, to answer your question, no, there isn't a module or a training yet on how to sleep in a train, a plane, or on the side of the road. But I'll have to think about that one because I'm sure there are some tools and strategies probably to help with that.
I would love to see that. That would be my next step for you. I think the Sleep Anywhere program could be a very interesting spin on things. But the point being is more like you said, using the word rest versus relax. I think for most of us, we're not good at taking rest. We're not, unfortunately, society doesn't give us that permission. And so we're spending the days go, 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 do. And then we expect like to just shut it off and then instantly sleep. Now, I noticed that you use the Oura Ring to help with the programs. And I absolutely love the Oura Ring because I think it does give a lot of really good insight into folks understanding like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not getting restful sleep. I'm not, my readiness score is terrible. Have you found that most people are pretty surprised when they start using the Oura Ring?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I have, and the demographic that we support, mostly the chronic insomnia category, people they greatly underestimate the amount of sleep they're getting. That's an interesting insight for people to have. Like, oh, I thought I was getting 2 hours of sleep. Actually, I'm getting like 4.5 hours, right? So there's an underestimation. Like they think that they're getting less than the actual hours. So that's a positive. And then people that are just looking at the quality of sleep. Like this was my own experience. I've always been a great sleeper. I am a great sleeper. I'm blessed with that. But I realized when I started to look at the quality of my sleep after doing certain habits during the day and then how that actually affected the next day, I was like, wow, okay, if I have food too close to bedtime, or if I have a glass of wine too close to bedtime, or if I don't take breaks and follow my own rules and rituals, wow, that really does affect the quality of my sleep, my deep sleep, my REM sleep. And then I could feel that even without even looking at the Oura Ring. You wake up, you kind of have this feeling like, was last night a restorative night of sleep or was it not? So if you didn't drink enough water or, all these little things that you could do throughout the day that would affect sleep quality, you could start to see and correlate because you're measuring it, and we can manage what we measure and we could master what we manage. So that's really what's it's powerful to connect your habits with tangible data as far as an outcome goes. And that's what it's like getting a blood test for your sleep, you know? And if you want to improve it, it's good to have a baseline and to measure it.
Yeah, you have to track it. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, the Oura Ring's not that accurate. I'm like, yeah, it's better than guessing. It's better than nothing. And I do think that it actually has some pretty good accuracy to it, even though a lot of people will argue on it with me.
Yeah, people. So the thing about that is nothing's 100%. And it's good enough. I mean, are there certain things that are off? Yeah, it's not perfect. And this is the other thing. It's like people try to perfect their sleep. That's a big pattern that most people don't realize that keeps them from sleep is this perfectionism, trying to the quest for the perfect night of sleep. It's like, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Like you can improve your sleep. There's things you can do, change your mind, your body, but sleep, you know, even if you're a normal sleeper, there's going to be some days or even maybe a week or weeks where you have off nights because of, you know, life. So it's what you make that mean is where people get stuck, is they make it mean that they're a bad sleeper or they're going to continue to experience this and, or they're broken or, and that's where it can get really tricky, but there isn't a perfect, every night is not going to be a perfect night of sleep. And that's, I think some people have unrealistic expectations around that, or they think they put it on a pedestal and think, oh, if only I could sleep, my life would be better. My relationship would be better. Yeah. In some aspects, that is true. You have more energy. You'd be more mentally stable. You'd have a higher functioning brain. But putting on a pedestal creates anxiety and pressure around getting it. And so that's where it can get a little tricky with some of these patterns that we dive into in our program a lot.
Sure. I can see that. I mean, a lot of the folks who I have found over time that struggle with sleep in my office are perfectionistic character folks, where everything needs to be just so. And if it's not, now we have, chaos and it's not gonna happen the way it's supposed to, which is interesting because I kind of could loop back and be like, okay, perfectionism, we're now looking too at what's going on in terms of that constant mind going to and the loops that go in the head. So definitely for insomnia folks, I hear her, it's just so cute.
Oh yeah, so she's now wanting to come back in. So let me just
grab her.
Okay, I'm gonna grab her.
There you go.
All right.
Aww.
Yeah. So these are some of the things I think people need to understand is really these underlying patterns of control and safety also play into sleep. Like if you don't feel safe in your bed or bedroom, or there's a lot of fear creates. And, fear creates a chemistry change in the body. So there's like a lot of emotional health gets linked to mental health gets linked to sleep as well. Making sure that you're safe and also letting go of trying to control your sleep. Most people that have really, really bad sleep issues are perfectionist, highly intellectual, usually successful people that also have a lot of control issues. They need things to be a certain way in order for them to rest or be okay. So yeah, I sleep challenges, I believe, can be a gift because they can create a painful experience for you to then address some of these other patterns that you wouldn't have paid attention to that can also create a lot of more freedom and peace in your life in general. It's sleep's a result. If you're not sleeping well, it's your mind and body telling you that something is out of balance, either in how you're thinking or what you're doing or in your physiology, usually in all three. But it can be a great opportunity to really address some of these other patterns that, we just never dive into because it's scary or we don't have the tools or we don't have the proper support. And we have people all the time that go through our programs and like, wow, I thought this was about sleep, but I actually learned how to live. Not only am I sleeping better, but I'm living better because I'm seeing how these tools that have improved my sleep can also help me be free of a lot of other unnecessary suffering or pain that I was creating and wasn't aware of.
I think that's kind of the thing, sleep is only one part of our life and dialing in the whole life help, it's kind of part of the whole. And with going back to one of the things you mentioned that I find absolutely fascinating and what I look at with patients, but I also look at with the fight or flight being stuck in like freeze mode and fearful mode and trauma and all of that. I do find that there is a huge connection with, like you said, feeling fearful, maybe not necessarily in your bed per se, but your home, maybe you're not feeling safe in the home or in a relationship or things of that nature that I think we should bring up for a second, because it's one of the things I don't think is talked about enough in the realm of PTSD or in the realm of just chronic trauma effect on the body. Is it common for you to see a lot of folks that don't realize that they're fearful per se of their bed? They're maybe fearful of something else in their life or fearful of a relationship, fearful of something in that nature that they discover during the program.
Yeah, a lot of times, yes. And most people that we support actually do have what we call bed dread. Like they literally have a visceral effect going into their bedroom. It's a place of pain. It's a place of fear. It's a place of like a place they don't want to spend time. So they have anxiety about sleep. And then there are certain people that then discover, oh, there's some other things that are creating this subtle fear, whether it's in a relationship or in their business or in some other area of their life that's important. Oftentimes it's around their health, because people now are being educated around what happens when you don't sleep, which is great, but it also is counterproductive, because like, oh my God, if I don't sleep, I'm going to get cancer and I'm going to, you know, my pre-existing issues are, I'm not going to recover. And now that creates all this anxiety that then keeps people from actually being able to rest. And all those things are true, which can make it a little bit challenging, but attaching yourself to like, oh my God, you know, my health is falling apart and all these things are falling apart. Again, it just creates more anxiety. But noticing, I think having that, again, that awareness, that self-awareness around your own mental stability, your own emotions, and knowing, you know, knowing what fear actually feels like in your body. And when you're in that state is extremely helpful, to be able to then shift out of it. Cause often a lot of times people just, they're constantly in a state of fear because they're watching the news and they're focusing all the things that are out of their control. They're seeing things that the way that they see the world is they're focused on what they don't have, what's out of their control. And they're in the future or they're stuck in the past. And then their body doesn't know the difference. So it reacts like it's in the past or it's in danger or, you know, that it's out of control. And then that becomes not being able to sleep. So again, like sleep really is, it's a symptom of it. In a lot of ways, you could say it's a symptom of fear. Like insomnia can be a symptom of fear or disconnection, which is another huge one. People are so isolated, you know, not feeling a part of community. And in longevity studies, number one thing that they found that helps people live the longest in countless studies, the Harvard Nurse Study, the Blue Zone studies, is a sense of belonging and community. And we are so disconnected from that. People are so isolated. They don't talk to their neighbors. You know, they're on their phones all the time, looking down, not like engaging with the world. That's a problem. Because we're not designed to be these isolated creatures. We're designed for community and connection. And when we don't have that, we're starving for that. That's, you know, going to lead to some imbalances.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we need our tribes. And I think with the pandemic, if it's not shown us anything, it's definitely shown us that how much we need connection and how much we need to be part of something, part of, you know, a connected group. And that makes sense. It makes sense when we don't have that, that's loss of fear. I mean, loss of security there. And so we have some fear, and then I can see where sleep would get lost in that department as well, because we're going back into that whole funnel of not connected, not fear, not connected to ourselves. Disconnection. You did mention something, and this is, I think, a great way to kind of bring everything back full circle, because you were talking about awareness at the beginning. And I think a lot of us really truly are a little disconnected from ourselves, disconnected from the present, disconnected from you know, knowing what to do for ourselves in this moment. What would you say to someone who's listening to this right now? And they're like, okay, Devin, yeah, you know, maybe I really do need to work on my sleep. You know, maybe I do need a program. What would you say to them, you know, going forward to get a win from today? What could be one thing that they could do to help connect a little bit better, to kind of really help themselves on the path to getting better sleep?
Yeah. So I love, this is such a powerful question. It would be do things that connect you to your body and mind's intelligence, innate wisdom. So slowing down would be a good place to start. Slowing down, like literally slowing everything you do, slow, take one or two steps, do it a little bit slower, and know that things will get done if you take, it's just slow down. We're moving too fast. And that, if you just slow the pace down, and then there's a time for sprint, there's a time to really get it and to go and to get things done and to, you know, do it all the things that you feel like you need to do. But don't, if you shift out of that and just start to shift into a slower mode throughout the day, throughout your weeks, throughout your months. And that's why it's great, you know, with the seasons changing, this is a great time to really slow down as we shift into a new season here. That would make a huge difference. It would allow your mind to actually slow down, which then would allow you to sleep. So whatever you could do to slow down, even just, you know, talk a little slower, walk a little slower, it would actually make a huge difference. It's such a simple thing, but you'd be surprised for people that hear this and actually take it on how challenging it is, because we're so used to moving at a quick pace most of the time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've spent most of my life, I think 0 to 60, like for most of it. And now I've just started in the last 2 years to be like, hey, I need to do this. Otherwise, it's not going to get any better. It's just going to keep spiraling. So important to slow down. I think that's a huge, huge takeaway, guys. I will put more info on slowing down on drjcrossnd.com with our podcast notes. So Devin, tell us, where can we find you? Where can folks learn how to join the Sleep Science Academy and get all kinds of more information from you?
Yeah, so sleepscienceacademy.com, and then on social, Devin Burke Wellness. You know, put a lot of free content out on YouTube. That's primarily where I like to share things via video. But yeah, if you're having issues with your sleep and you feel like you need more support, check out sleepscienceacademy.com.
Excellent. And do you guys have individual programs, group programs? How does it work?
Yeah, it is. It's individual, but we have a group component. So when clients decide to work with us and to really address the root cause of their sleep issues, they're getting one-on-one support as well as group support. We want to create a sense of community as people move through our program, but we also understand that one-on-one personalization is really important. So we combine both in our programs. Yeah.
Well, nice little hybrid program, if you will. Love it. All right, Devin, thank you so much for coming on the HealthVex and sharing all of this great information. We'll make sure to put that at drjcrossnd.com. You guys can get all the show notes and any other details to find the Sleep Science Academy and Devin Burke and his social. Thanks, Devin.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the HealthVex podcast. This podcast was brought to you by Blue Blocks, the blue light blocking glasses. If you follow me on Instagram, you will see me wearing my computer glasses. Those are the Galaxy version. They're fabulous. I have not been having headaches in my office thanks to those awful, awful overhead lights that we have. Those buggers are blah. So anyway, blue light blocking glasses, game changers for your health. Check out them at blueblocks.com.